And welcome back in. This is the Tennessee Star Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you. And earlier this week, Senator Lamar Alexander dropped a bombshell. I mean, we were having those little earthquakes around the state. Nothing was bigger than Lamar Alexander's announcement that he would not seek re-election to the U.S. Senate in 2020. And Senator Lamar Alexander, a good friend of the show and longtime friend of the Gill family, on our Newsmakers line to tell us a little bit about his decision and what's next. And Lamar, good to have you with us.
Well, good morning, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. I have to tell you, you fooled me. You surprised me. The actions you were taking the last several months. You know, you were more visible. You were aggressive in representing the interest of Tennessee and stepping up in the Senate, and you were giving every indication you were running, and then you surprised me Monday by announcing you didn't. When did you make the decision?
Well, I made the decision in August. I go up to Canada and go fishing in August. Senator McConnell kind of messed up my fishing this summer because we lost our August recess. And then I kept it to myself because I wanted to make sure it was the right thing to do. You know, serving in the Senate is a tremendous privilege. It's hard to get here. It's hard to stay here. It's hard to give up. But I figured, look, the people have been really generous to me. They've allowed me to serve as governor twice, senator three times, and that's enough. It's time for somebody else to have the privilege. And I wanted to go ahead and announce it and get it out of the way so political distractions didn't get in the way. I've got a lot of work to do the next 2 years. I got more done in my last couple of years as governor. You remember that time because you were there for some of it. I got more done then than I did in the early part. So I'm planning to focus on reducing health care costs, making college education worth it, and spending the next 2 years doing my job.
Well, and even just in the last few weeks, there's been the opioid bill that passed. Last night, the Senate passed legislation dealing with criminal justice reform. You've pointed out a month or so ago, things are being done, and they're just not getting media attention.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it's kind of like a split-screen television here. On one side, you've got Kavanaugh with all the mud throwing back and forth, and on the other side, you've got 72 senators working together to deal with our biggest public health epidemic, which is opioids. And we also passed the songwriters bill, which is tremendously important in Nashville, the thousands of songwriters, to make sure they get paid a fair market value. And we passed biomedical research, all these medical miracles, record funding for that. So there's a lot going on the other side of the split screen television, and that's where I spend my time. You don't see me as much over on the mud throwing side.
We've been friends for a long time, and my own assessment when people have asked me the last couple of days, why do you think Lamar made this decision? My assessment is that part of it is a mudslinging, bare-knuckle brawl is not who you are politically, and another political campaign in the season we're in, in the divisive nature we're in, would have required you to run a campaign that is not who you are. Was that a factor?
Not much, Steve. I mean, if you'll think back when I was elected governor, I had a really rough campaign with Jake Butcher.
Yeah, I remember the glass buildings ad, which was still one of the best.
When I was elected to the Senate, Bob Clements' campaign said some pretty unpleasant things about me. So I'm accustomed to running a tough campaign. I think it's, I'd rather go out batting 400 than some other way. And I will have served longer as governor and senator than anybody else. And I think it's just time. It's time for somebody else to do it. I called President Trump Sunday night, and he called me right back. And before I could say anything, he said, "Well, Marcia got elected. That worked out fine. Now let's talk about you serving another 20 years." I said, "Mr. President, I'm calling to say I'm not going to run in 2 years." He said, "Well, why would you do that?" And I explained to him that I've had this privilege for a long time, and I think it's time for somebody else to have it. He said, "Okay." He said, "We'll find some things to work on, and I'll talk to you this week."
Randy Boyd in the Times Free Press today, who's filling in as interim president at the University of Tennessee, a full-time role you once held, announced that he's not going to be seeking the seat. Governor Haslam has announced he's going to consider it, but not making a decision right now. You mentioned our mutual friend Bill Hagerty, ambassador to Japan and former commissioner of ECD, as a front runner. What advice would you have to people who may be considering running?
My advice, and Bill you mentioned Bill Hagerty. He, like you, and maybe your listeners don't know this, you are both White House fellows, which is not a easy thing to do. I mean, I think Governor Haslam and Bill Hagerty are the most obvious choices. Of course, the governor is much better known than anybody else. And Hagerty's much closer to President Trump than about anybody else. So those, that's an advantage. But we've got a barn full of congressmen, all good people who may want to run. And there may be a Bill Lee out there, somebody we haven't thought about who would be an excellent candidate. My advice would be to ask yourself one question. Do you have a, why are you running and what do you hope to accomplish? And if you have a purpose about it, don't worry about whether you think you might win or not. Just haul off and run. That's what I always did. And if I'd waited to find out whether the polls were good, which in my case right now they are, I wouldn't have run for anything.
Well, you mentioned the Bill and Lee model, and we've seen around the country in Senate races a brawn in Indiana and other locations, business people moving into the political arena with no prior political experience and winning primaries and in some cases winning the general election. So we've seen that play out in Senate races around the country in the last couple of cycles.
Well, we have, and Braun and Bill Lee were alike in the fact that neither of them, both of them, were the beneficiary of running against people who were running very negative campaigns. In my last campaign for the Senate, I didn't even mention my opponent, didn't say a negative word about it. Now, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that this time, and I'd have been prepared to run a tough race if I needed to. But given my poll numbers and the president's interest in my serving another 20 years, you know, I did not run because I thought it would be a hard race. I did not run because of age. I just decided that 18 years in the Senate and 8 years as governor is plenty, and I love what I'm doing. I feel like I'm doing it better than I ever have. And I'm looking into these next 2 years to try to continue in the same way.
Well, and at 78, Lamar, I mean, in either the Senate or the Supreme Court, they refer to you as a youngster.
They do, and I like that. Ted Williams, I'm no Ted Williams, but if I remember right, he had a home run in his last at bat. That's the way to go out.
Senator Alexander Michael Patrick Leahy, question for you. Will you vote, if it comes for a vote in the Senate, would you vote yes to fund the border wall for $5 billion?
I've already done that several times. I voted earlier this year. I co-sponsored a bill that would have authorized and appropriated $25 billion. It got 54 votes, and it also would have solved the DACA problem, but the administration opposed it. In 2013, I voted for an immigration bill that got 69 votes and would have solved about 90% of all the problems we have right now. It was $40 billion for border security, including walls. E-Verify dealt with all the issues of legal status, which are difficult.
Do you support Senator Alexander, if the Senate doesn't vote for the border wall, do you support proposals to allocate other funds that have already been authorized to build the wall?
Well, that depends if they're authorized by Congress. You know, I'm a conservative constitutionalist, and I believe in Article 1 and 2. And if Congress has appropriated the funds and the executive has the authority to do it, sure, that's fine. If Congress hadn't appropriated the funds, I would think any conservative constitutionalist wouldn't approve of it.
So specifically, would you support transferring military construction money to build the wall?
I'd have to look at that because I'm not sure it's authorized that way. If you'd have to read the law, that's an old-fashioned view, but you have to read the law and see whether Congress authorized it. And if it did, the executive can spend it. So I would read the law, listen respectfully to whatever the president says he wants to do, and let him do it. There shouldn't be any disagreement about border security. I mean, the Congress has voted, as I said, $40 billion in 2013, which the House didn't take up. And then earlier this year, we had bipartisan support in the Senate for $25 billion over 10 years, which is what the president wants. So,
are you surprised that Chuck Schumer and the Democrats are so adamantly opposed to any spending for border wall now when they voted for it, or as you point out, earlier this year and in the past? Is this an indication that literally they're just going to be all no all the time and try to obstruct, delay, and just throw chaos both from the House and now from the Senate side? I mean, the Senate's supposed to be the group that behaves like the adults, but as you've seen, even with your back and forth with Chuck Schumer a few weeks ago, they're not in the business of trying to make stuff happen right now.
I think the problem right now is that Nancy Pelosi doesn't have the votes to be elected Speaker, and she's not willing to make any kind of agreement until after she's elected. I think that's 99% of the problem. Fact is that earlier this year, the president asked for $1.6 billion for the border wall. That's what the president's budget asked for. And the Senate Appropriations Committee approved that with bipartisan support. All but five Democrats voted for it. So the president got what he wanted earlier this year, and the Democrats voted for it. Now they're saying no even to what they approved earlier this year. And I suspect the only reason is because Speaker Pelosi won't agree to it.
Yeah, she has to find a way to convince 30 or so Democrats who ran for office promising they would not vote for her for Speaker to vote for, because if she doesn't get them, she doesn't get elected Speaker. Nobody gets elected Speaker, I guess.
She's got a pretty rowdy group over there. Sometimes people look at our party and say, you all have some hardliners, but they've got people jumping off the left side of the cliff. And she literally can't count the votes to be elected Speaker. And I think that's why she's unwilling to make any sort of agreement here. And that's too bad, because on all of our other appropriations bills, 75% of all the funding, we got it done on time, on budget, military, biomedical research, national laboratories. And that's what we're supposed to do, and that stalemate's keeping us from doing that for the rest of the budget.
Senator Lamont Alexander, we appreciate you. You've been a great friend for a long time. You are always welcome here. Wishing you and Honey and the rest of the family a great Merry Christmas, and we'll talk again soon.
Steve and Michael, thanks to you both as well. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. We'll be back with more of the Tennessee Star Report in just a moment.